Would you turn, please, to the second chapter of the book of Exodus? Exodus in chapter 2. Exodus chapter 2, and we're going to read at verse 1. And there went a man of the house of Levi, and took to wife a daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived and bare a son, and when she saw that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. And when she could not longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes, and daubed it with slime and with pitch, and put the child therein. And she laid it in the flags by the river's brink. And his sister stood afar off, to wit what would be done to him. And the daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself at the river, and her maidens walked along by the river's side. And when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it. And when she had opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the babe wept. And she had compassion on him, and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call to thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." And the maid went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, "Take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages." And the woman took the child and nursed it. And the child grew, and she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she called his name Moses, and she said, "Because I drew him out of the water." Would you turn over, please, to the book of Acts and chapter 7, the Acts of the Apostles and chapter 7. I'd like to break into the story of where Stephen is speaking to the Jewish leaders, Acts chapter 7. And we'll begin our reading at verse 20, Acts chapter 7 and verse 20. "In which time Moses was born, and was exceeding fair, and nourished up in his father's house 3 months. When he was cast out, Pharaoh's daughter took him up and nourished him for her own son. And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and was mighty in words and deeds. And when he was full 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel." Now, we'll read further, please, in the letter to the Hebrews and chapter 11. Hebrews and chapter 11. We'll begin our reading here at verse 23, Hebrews 11 and 23. "By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents, because they saw he was a goodly child, a proper child. And they were not afraid of the king's commandment. By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. For he had respect unto the recompense of the reward." Oh, may the Lord bless to us this reading of his word. It used to be that older men, at least I recall it well enough, would say this: the life of Moses readily divides into three segments. Most of you have heard this many times. 40 years he spent in the land of Egypt, 40 years in the backside of the desert, and 40 years going through the wilderness. 40 years in the land of Egypt, he was the son of Pharaoh's daughter. 40 years in the desert, he was the shepherd of Jethro's sheep. And 40 years in the wilderness, he was the leader of God's people. But also quaintly, it is put this way. The first 40 years of Moses' life, he learned to be a somebody. In the second 40 years of Moses' life, he learned to be a nobody. And in the third 40 years of his life, he learned what God can do with a somebody who becomes a nobody. It's often said, God's way up is down. Every single believer needs to know something of learning God and less of self. Moses had 40 years. Now, that's a long time to graduation, isn't it? The Apostle Paul had his experience in Arabia. But we all need time to learn God if we're going to be used of God. Simple as that. What's upon my mind this morning is simply this. I'd like to go back for a little while to the first 40 years of Moses' life and break it up into three segments. Now, we read three passages, and I hope you noted the little things that were said in the three passages. But three segments of that first 40 years. Quite evidently, there's a three-month period when he's a babe in his mother's arms. Did you notice that it said, his mother hid him? That's Exodus. Did you notice that it said in Hebrews 11, it's his parents? You notice in Acts 7, and it's nice to watch these little distinctions, he was hid in his father's house. Now, very simply then, there's a three-month period where a mother keeps a male boy, a male child, a baby boy. And beyond that 3 months, she's forced to make a decision. 3 months then is a babe in his mother's arms. There's a period of time, and I don't know how long, when he would be a child under his mother's instruction. And that's the crucial one I want to think about today. But then there's a third period of time when the mother can keep him no longer, and he's turned over to Pharaoh's daughter. And what do we read of Moses? Learned in all the wisdom of Egypt. And I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. All the wisdom of Egypt. There's a number of things I could tell you about Egypt at that time in history, but I don't know what it really means. Nor do I know what it means to live in Pharaoh's palace. I don't mean to speak against Winnipeg, but I suspect Pharaoh's palace might have been a better place to be. You know, with the climate and everything else, all the nice. Can you imagine what it? Egypt, folks, would have been the greatest power of the world at that time. The splendor of the world would have been found in Egypt, and Moses is right at the heart of it all. That's why I say I don't know what it means. So we have him in those three periods then. I want you to notice the little passage we read said this of Moses, that he was a goodly child, whatever that means. His mother saw he was a goodly child. I notice it says he was exceeding fair in Acts, whatever that means. I notice Hebrews says he was a proper child, whatever that means. But those three phrases must mean something. The Word of God repeats them as we go through. Now I want you to think, just with me, of this boy, born in the land of Egypt, born under the sentence of death. And I'd ask you to notice with me this little thing, that it was the instruction of the king of the land that such babies as Moses would be cast into the river. The irony of what we've read is this, that his mother did put him into the river, but not exactly the way that Pharaoh intended. So let's look for a few minutes at what his mother did do. And why am I reading this, and why am I concerned with this morning? For this reason. That river was to be a river of death. That river would have taken away that little Jewish boy, that Hebrew boy. That river was for Egypt's purposes, not for God's. And what I'm concerned about is this. We have a woman who saw something in a child that she reckoned not to be for Egypt, not to be for Pharaoh, but a child to be for God. Might I ask you just to consider this for a moment? I don't know what Moses' mother would have understood or would have been able to read, as we can today when we pick up the book of Genesis and read it. But I believe this. She certainly knew who she was, where she had come from, what people she belonged to, and she knew something of God. You see, years before we come to Exodus chapter 2, God had spoken to a man who was revered among these people, a man called Abraham. God had told Abraham that his people would be afflicted for the 400 years, strangers in the land. God had told Abraham that in the fourth generation, they were going to come out of that bondage. Now it's a Jacob who went down to Egypt. It's a Levi, the son of Jacob, that was with him. It's an Amram that comes from there, the father of Moses. And then there's a Moses. What's that? In the fourth generation, they'd be coming out. And then one day there's a baby boy that comes into the family of two Levitical people, father and mother of the tribe of Levi. The Levites will become the priestly tribe later on. And this child that's born in this fourth generation, a goodly child, exceeding fair, a proper child, whatever the words mean. I'm simply saying to you that we have a mother who saw something of the purposes of God here. And she's determined that her child is going to be kept. But secondly, she's determined that her child will be raised not for Egypt, not for Pharaoh, but for God. Now, for a moment, practically, would all of us think about this? Let me say again that we live in a world where there's something worse than the River Nile, where the purposes of this world would be that children would be thrown into the downward flow of an atheistic evolutionary society, caught up by it and destroyed for any purposes of God. Well, what did this mother do? Three things, if you wish. He's got to go to the river. All right, she'll take him to the river then. But she just doesn't put him in the river. She puts him in an ark. Now, there are many lovely things, and many of you will have gone over these, many lovely things that can be said about that ark and the pitch and so on. Lots of lovely pictures in there. But she doesn't just put them in the river. She puts them in the ark. Step number one. But number two, she doesn't push the ark out into midstream. She puts them in the reeds, the rushes, by the side of the river. And number three, she has a little girl that's watching this ark. Now, yesterday in the reading, our brethren were talking about the unseen hand of God behind Naomi and Ruth. I am simply saying to you, here's a Hebrew mother who can't keep the child anymore in the house. Obviously, it's getting older, noisier, and so on. And she has to do something. All right, so we have the ark. We have the ark in the reeds. We have the sister, I believe, that's watching. Now, what's Mom going to do next? Well, you'll have to put up with what I think rather than what I read. But what's Mom going to do next? There's not much else she can do except pray. She's gone as far as she can. Now, she can only leave it with the Lord. Now, Christian parents and mothers in particular, can I say to you, there's the awful system of our society, as I mentioned, worse than any River Nile. What can we do? What can we do? It's the demand of society that the children go there. And incidentally, I don't want to get into any controversial issues here, but you can't have it better than this story. It's private education in the home at government expense. Isn't that true? It's an unqualified mother as a teacher. Careful now. What do I mean by unqualified? She doesn't have a degree from the University of Cairo. It's a mother paid by the government to teach a child. A lovely situation. But our governments aren't so kind today. In any event, what's she to do? I said to you, she can only cast the whole matter to God. And can we not see that behind the scenes here? Now, you can speculate all you like as to why she put the child, where she put the child, and so on. But she would have no way of knowing exactly what Pharaoh's daughter would do, even if she came to that spot. But the unseen hand of God, the tears of a baby boy melted the heart of the princess of Egypt. And we find the woman is moved to take him as her own. What's Miriam to do? I assume it's Miriam, and I don't know how old she is at this point. But what a wise little sister. Maybe her mother put her up to it, I don't know. But what a wise little sister. Shall I go and fetch a nurse for you? Guess who she's got in mind? Just look at how the story is developing. What nurse do you suppose? Pharaoh's daughter agrees with it and then pays the price afterwards. But listen, Christians, because of this mother and her concern, because of this sister and what she did, Pharaoh's daughter is not only going to pay the price of Moses' education, there's a greater price coming down the road. When this man Moses, what did the passages say? Come to years, full 40 years old. He's going to reach a point where he's learned something, and he makes a decision based upon what he's learned. Now then, Mom takes the child back into her home. What do you suppose she's doing in those intervening years before one day Pharaoh's daughter knocks on the door? My concern, obviously, is this. Mothers What are you to be doing? From the infant stage to the point where the call of the river is there. Sometime or other, your children have got to leave the house where you are. I mean, there's schooling, there's employment, there's got to be something out there. They've got to go out and they've got to face it. What are you to be doing in that brief interval? We're not told how long it was. Maybe that's best that we don't know, because you don't know how long you've got. But what's his mother doing? What do you suppose this mother would be doing? Now, you can't jump ahead to the 40-year mark and read those words, "when he was come to years, refused." You can't do that without realizing somewhere back there, somebody taught this young boy who he was, whose he belonged to, where he had come from, how he should live. But then, again, I don't know the answer to this. I wonder if the mother of Moses kept praying up to the 40 years, likely. I wonder if the mother of Moses, on any occasions or many occasions, might have said, "He's gone so far with this Pharaoh's palace thing now that he'll never come back." After all, how could the Hebrew people or a Hebrew home compete with what he's into over there? All the wisdom and all the finery of Pharaoh's palace, he'll never come back. He's lost. Well, maybe she was more of a woman of faith than I am, and perhaps she never thought that. Maybe she thought very, very carefully and said, one day he'll come to his senses and realize who he is and God's purpose for his life. Now, why am I saying these things? Obviously for this reason. Mother, father, don't give up. If you've a boy or if you've a girl that's gone beyond the babe stage and has left the home and is out there, don't give up. Have you poured into them in their infant years? And if you have children in that category, my concern is this: do it. Get the Word of God into their lives as soon as you can. Tell them the stories of the Bible. Tell them the stories of Christ. You can't save them, but you can certainly instill in them the truth and the seed of God's Word, and then pray. And then pray and leave it with the Lord. I stand before you today, and many of you will have heard me say this before. I didn't grow up in a Christian home, so I didn't have this kind of teaching. But I had a grandmother. I know very, very little about her, but I had a grandmother. And in my reflections or recollections of my grandmother, there's only three or four little things that I remember. But one that stands out is this: of a little old woman on her knees, kneeling with an old wooden chair. What's she doing? She just kind of, I see her lips moving. You can still see that. She's quietly praying. I remember that same grandmother taking three little boys by the hand. I was number three. And we go to the library, the public library in a small town, and get books. She liked to read. My own mother has told me that she couldn't write. When she read out loud. She learned to read by, I don't know, I don't understand all of that. But anyway, she was always reading. Couldn't write, but she could read. But anyway, that's not what I wanted to tell you. The little mother, the little grandmother that was a reader, got the boys reading. The little grandmother was a woman of prayer. You know what she was praying for. And the little grandmother, when she prayed, had a text on the wall over her chair. It's one Bible verse. That's obviously the first I ever learned. And I don't understand this now. We could talk about it afterwards. But as a little boy, I remember looking at that verse, just like looking over here at a verse. And I remember the verse. It said this: "Seek ye the Lord while he may be found. Call ye upon him while he is near." And for some reason, perhaps the way my mind works or whatever, I can see my grandmother, I can see the verse, and I noticed the word "while" is in the verse two times. Now, what would make me think that? Big deal, says you. "Seek ye the Lord while he may be found. Call ye upon him while." And I remember as a little boy looking at that verse and thinking, while. That means the time could come when you wouldn't be able to find the Lord. But what else could it mean? "Seek ye the Lord while he may be found." Now, that, just that, was stuck into my mind somehow. I didn't know anything else. But can I tell you this? You can help me with the understanding of it. That verse never left my mind. It was planted there. Years and years went by. I wasn't saved as a child. And again, the time would come when I'm in my late 20s and I'm convicted by the Word of God that I'm a sinner. I know that I need to be saved. I believe this book. I know I need to be saved. And then there's a day when, bang, "Seek ye the Lord while he may be found." And I remember thinking, I have left this matter too long. My while has expired. I can't get saved. You see, I tried. I tried believing. I tried faith. I tried everything. I can't get saved. My while has expired. How is it that God would put into the heart of a little boy one verse with a word there twice, and then 20 plus years later bring it back? Bang. So let's come back here. Here's the mother of Moses, and she's got this child for how long? I don't know. But one day, as I said, Pharaoh's daughter's coming. Now, whatever period of time this is the opportunity to tell Moses of the purposes of God. I mentioned Abraham. Would this mother remember there was a man called Jacob? And when Jacob was dying, he told them to take his body up. Could I ask you this? Up where? Well, you say up to the land of Canaan. Listen, he left there. There was nothing up there. Destitute and famine, he left. What's he leaving down here? The land of Goshen, the delta of the Nile River. You won't mind if I say, would you? Nobody in their right mind leaves this for that. I probably didn't say that the right way, did I? Well, nobody that had an eye on farming would leave this for that. Nobody that had their mind on money would leave this for that. The Nile Delta? Listen, that's worth millions. Nothing there but trouble. Except for this. That's what God promised Abraham. And that's where God wanted Abraham and Abraham's children, which included Jacob. And when old Jacob reaches the point where he wants to be taken there, he understands the significance of what this is all about. And he has no interest in this. No, this is the place to be, but not for Jacob. You remember there's another one coming called Joseph. What does Joseph want before he dies? Same thing. Take me back. God will surely visit you. Here's another one who understood. Look, we're down here in the very best of the land of Egypt back in Joseph's day. But we don't belong here. We belong there. And I'm saying to you, the mother of Moses would have understood. It's not Egypt with all of its finery, neither the Delta nor the palace. It's not Egypt with all of its money and everything else. No, just let me pause, Christians. If you were the mother of Moses, perhaps I should say if I were the father of Moses, how would I think? I might have said, oh, thank God he doesn't have to make bricks. He's going to be over there in the palace. All the lovely food and clothing and everything else. Thank God my son is spared the life of a slave. Why, he's going to be the general. He's going to be the top of Egypt one of these days. Thank God for that. Well, I don't think she prayed that way. I don't think she prayed that way at all. Now, why did I say that? Because we can become so caught up with this world and this world system. Thank God my boy has made it. Just a second. Made it where? Thank God my girl has what? Some of you know that when I was saved, I worked in the field of geophysics. When I had told the company I was leaving, they offered me transfers all over the place. And many a time I've been asked this question by well-meaning Christians. Where would you be today if you had stayed in the work you were doing? And my answer inevitably has been this: I might have been in hell. Where would I be today had I stayed where I was? I might have been in hell. So there's no thanking God for earthly success in that sense. I'm not trying to belittle it now, but that's not the point. Here's a woman who has her heart upon the fact that God has purposes. And she wants her boy to live for God. Just for a few minutes. The little passage in Hebrews 11. I learned long ago, as many of you have learned long ago, that whenever you approach a problem, it's sort of just an old, ancient, but well worthwhile effort to ask yourself 6 questions. Now, they're not very complicated. Here they are. Who, what, when, where, why, and how? That's simple enough. Anytime you approach a problem, who, what, when, where, why, and how? All right, Hebrews 11. Who? Moses. When? When he was come to years. Elsewhere, grown, full 40 years. Now, folks, the when of this statement, this is not some whimsical idea of a little boy. It's not something that a little boy is moved by looking at a picture book or something. This is not a decision made by a young teenager who might be swayed by somebody's eloquence. Come to years, 40 years. Here's a decision made by a man who's at the top of society. But it's a decision based upon what he learned when he was old, when he was younger. It's a decision that he's making when he's counted all the factors. He's going out to battle, but like the story the Lord told, he's weighed up the enemy. Building a tower, but he's valued the cost. Come to years. That's Moses. That's the who, the when. The what. He refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Now, Christians, I must pause and ask us to reflect upon that just for a minute. The greatest thing that perhaps any young man of that day could have would be to be called. Well, we're not just talking about words here. It's not just that Pharaoh adopted him. That's not the idea. If I said to you, that man is the Prince of Wales. That man is the Duke of York. And if I looked at anyone and put one of these kinds of titles with it, that's the idea. This is a title. Son of Pharaoh's daughter. Not just words. Not just that Pharaoh's daughter raised him up and owns him and so on. Son of Pharaoh's daughter. It would mean this. The Egyptians around, the servants, the soldiers, the whole lot of them. They'd have to say, that man. That's the man of the palace. That's the man of the future. Be careful. That's a man of tremendous importance. That's how they looked at it. What does Moses say? Refused. Can you see a man saying, I am not the son of Pharaoh's daughter. I am not an Egyptian. I'm a Hebrew. I don't belong here. I belong out there. You better think about what out there means. Bunch of brickmakers, bunch of slaves, bunch of nobodies. I don't belong here. Who, what, when, where, why, and how? Listen, a what is, in this case, is an intelligent, reasonable weighing up the factors and deciding. I am not for this. I belong to God. Where did this take place? In the palace. You read the story. One day he just leaves to go out and see how his brethren are doing. I don't want to digress into the side issues here. He went, yes, and there are lessons that he must yet learn. But you notice what else Hebrews says. It's by faith. By faith. He didn't get a letter from any of these out there saying, come out, we need you. He's moved by what he's learned through the years from his mother. And I suggest to you, he's moved by this moment in his experience when the Spirit of God brings home to him the truth of what he had learned earlier. It's by faith. Esteeming the reproach of Christ. What would he know of the reproach of Christ? Mind you, Hebrews, I understand. Hebrews 11 is God's record, is God looking back and giving God's reckoning of the thing. But he's a man who's leaving all the finery of this world and all the glamour of Egypt to be part of God's purposes and God's people. Far greater riches than all the treasures of Egypt. My time is gone, but Christians, could I just plead with us today, younger or older? Parents, don't raise your children for this world, but for the next. Teach them while they're young the things of God And then you can only leave it with God so that it bear fruit in its time. Don't give up. 40 years was a long time back there, still a long time. But don't give up even if it's more than 40 years. Keep praying. But then let me say to everyone here today, it's not this world we're to live for. We're to live for Christ. The reproach of Christ. You weigh it up carefully. What's he leaving? What's he taking up? He goes out with these slaves. He's got certain ideas that are not going to work out, but he goes out with these slaves. But now that the decision has been made, God is going to draw him aside for another, can I say, little while? And show him and teach him something of how God works. And it's not by hitting Egyptians. But he has to learn the methods of God. Get our eyes upon the purpose of God. And get our eyes upon the purpose of God both for ourselves and for our children. May God bless his word.